small group lessons for all ages and experience levels, woodwind and brass instrument rentals. Visit classicviolins.com, 577-5488.
This is WGTD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show is going to be a pile of very interesting security and privacy-related issues, many of which you would probably characterize as excerpts from 1984 or Orwell's Animal Farm. Very interesting things coming out of the tech industry lately that we should probably be very aware of. So let's get started on this. The first thing I'm going to let you know is about some very relevant issues associated with Windows 10 Build 18.09 coming out as of October 2nd, 2018. And Build 18.09, some people have really experienced some problems with it. And I've had a bunch of clients that had issues with it as well. And these problems are ranging anywhere from an upgrade doesn't go well and all of the files that are in the local documents, local pictures folder. Now, I haven't seen this particular one, but it's being pretty widely reported that this has happened to many people, that the local documents and local pictures, basically local folders that contain all of your files, are just whoosh, empty, all gone. It's not hanging out inside the Windows old folder or anything like that. The stuff is just gone. So as with anything, this is why we should have backups of our data on a daily basis. The other interesting component to that is that apparently no files that were in OneDrive were affected. And I'm not terribly surprised by that because, of course, OneDrive is a synchronization technology. So even if the stuff had gotten wiped out on the local copy, it would have been on the cloud copy, unless these were deletions that were forward replicated into the cloud server. So some other issues that people have run into with regards to Build 18.09 of Windows 10 is where there's now talk that Edge, which is a browser, is heavily reliant upon IPv6. But IPv6 has been problematic on a lot of networks for a very long time, and so there's been a lot of settings put in place to either make IP version 4 preferential over IPv6 or just outright disable IPv6. And so far, based upon my testing, I don't see where that's actually the causation of the problem. Instead, what I'm seeing is that some Build 18.09 change has changed how Edge just interacts with network traffic in general. So we're still working through that. And then one of the other factors that we've seen was the unhappy coincidence of some changes inside of Office 365 at the exact same time that changed how AutoDiscover worked. And because that changed how AutoDiscover worked, then that caused an appearance that Outlook would not connect. And people thought that that was related to Windows 10 Build 18.09. So the bottom line is, I think the IT community is still working through these issues. Certainly Microsoft is still working through a number of issues associated with this. If you can possibly delay the installation of the upgrade on your computer to Build 18.09, then I do suggest you do that. You do delay that. You're still going to get security patches, so it's not like it's a security risk to not update it at this time. Probably 10 months from now would be a good time to make darn sure you had it, or if past that point in time, you may not be getting security updates anymore. So, and of course, please make sure you have backups of your data. Okay. The next topic I want to talk about is solid-state hard drives, because solid-state hard drives are really the delineator in terms of performance at the hardware layer. I've been saying for the last 20 years that a spindle-driven hard drive is the slowest component of a computer. And this is still true today, and even a solid-state hard drive is the slowest component of a computer today. RAM modules are going to be faster, a processor is going to be faster. You know, all of these components that actually comprise or contribute directly to the perceived performance of the computer, the slowest component is and likely always will be whatever is used for non-volatile storage, which is the hard drive. Now, that could be, in the most high-end and most expensive options, that is like a flash RAM option. It's basically where they're taking a really big RAM module and turning it into the hard drive. So at that point, the hard drive, which really isn't even a hard drive anymore, it's like a really big RAM module, is effectively the same speed as a RAM module. But that is not what you see in the vast majority of servers or laptops or PCs. And the vast majority of servers, laptops, and PCs, what you're going to find are solid-state hard drives. Now, what most people don't realize about solid-state hard drives is because there are no moving parts, they have a limited lifespans, and that lifespans is dictated by what's called drive writes per day endurance ratings. And after, so if you buy a hard drive and it has a drive writes per day rating, and when that rating becomes exceeded, is it 3 years from now? Is it 5 years from now? Is it 7 years from now? It depends on a whole bunch of factors. But when it is exceeded, then you can pretty well be guaranteed that you cannot rely upon the integrity of that data that is on that drive anymore. In the case of it being an operating system, the operating system may be starting to go corrupt just simply because the reads and writes don't work properly anymore because the hard drive is too old and tired and worn out. In the case of if this was being utilized for your data files, well, that'd be really, truly catastrophic because then these files could be going corrupt and you may not even notice it. So I really wanted to bring this point up because there are so many different types of solid-state hard drives out there. How do you know which one is the right fit for your needs? Well, first and foremost, look for what is called the DWPD rating, which is the drive writes per day. Now, the DWPD rating, obviously the higher the rating, the longer the lifespans of that hard drive. And if you're looking at a hard drive that doesn't even have a DWPD rating, then I would probably not buy that hard drive. And I saw some servers recently that had hard drives that did not have a DWPD rating, and it was, you know, it was concerning. So then I checked with the manufacturer, and the manufacturer rep basically told me, yeah, those aren't reliable hard drives. So I'm like, well, clearly I don't want to put that in a server if those are not considered to be reliable hard drives. So check out the DWPD rating. I will post an article for this so that you can investigate that topic more in depth at your leisure. Now, beyond that, let's get talking about this massive problem that's happening now where Google, yes, that's right, the tyrannical organization who's trying to develop a panopticon, and actually I think they feel as though they have created a panopticon, they have entered into a secret deal with MasterCard over a year ago, and that allows them to track the sales of who Google deems to be their customers, which is basically anyone and everyone that has or has ever had a Gmail account or a G Suite account. And also included in that list is anyone that actually has tracking cookies from any Google advertisements, and that can be traced back to an identity. So what we're really talking about is they have some way of knowing what your first name and last name is, or your phone number. And by the way, if you sign up for a Gmail or a G Suite account, absolute 100% verification of the ownership of that account is required. You can't use virtual phone numbers in order to sign up for that account. It has to be a phone number that is directly tieable back to your driver's license identity, so your state-issued ID, and this has to be through a carrier such as Verizon or AT&T or a major mobile phone carrier. And it has to be a mobile phone number. It can't be a snail phone number. So there's all of these identity collection and verification mechanisms that exist, and these don't exist for purposes of having any security. Like, it doesn't exist to give you better security. It exists so that they can deny you from having a Gmail account without proving to them who the accountable real human being is on the back end. Now, this has massive implications because then they can go and get a hold of MasterCard data like they have now, and they can correlate that with the identity information that they have about you, and then they turn that into statistics that their advertisers, that Google advertisers pay for, which says, oh, well, we have this data that proves that your advertisements have been this effective because we can see where these adverts directly led to these MasterCard-based sales. So if all that Google had to do was pay millions of dollars to MasterCard for the data, well, how far behind are they in terms of getting a hold of the Visa data? So that has sparked a number of people to completely disentangle themselves from Google and Gmail. In fact, there was a major journalist who said it took him about a year, but he basically got rid of Google out of his life, and he, you know, he felt quite a lot better after having done so. But that isn't the only issue going on with Google lately. Google has literally had a ton of employees resign and quit over this issue of the creation of the Dragonfly search engine. Now, the Dragonfly search engine is part of the Panopticon totalitarian surveillance and oppression system that has been in use in China for at least the last decade. And this is particularly scary because this system, there is a global Agenda 2030 Smart Cities Initiative objective, and not a week goes by, it seems, that we here in the Kenosha Racine community area are not receiving, you know, I mean, we're always receiving these emails about this Foxconn project. And the Foxconn project is always talking about their Smart Cities Initiative. Well, Smart Cities is associated with having 5G wireless everywhere, having video surveillance everywhere, wireless tracking everywhere, and of course this is tracking back into your identity, and of course there's going to be microphones because then they can have ShotSpotter. I mean, the most recent of these emails just came out Thursday this week, so 2 days ago, where they were talking about how Foxconn is building this downtown Racine facility to highlight their smart city programs. And for their 8K, 5G, and artificial intelligence ecosystems, right? So, I mean, I'm reading right from their little newsletter about this. So they're telegraphing what's happening, but I don't think that the average person in the Kenosha and Racine community understands the implication of that. I mean, first of all, 5G is very highly correlated with adverse health, human health effects, and this has been widely documented. It's even now to the point where there are communities in California who are being very forward-thinking about this, and they are just outright banning 5G based upon dozens and dozens of health studies by high-level scientists. And, you know, this is not some sort of fiction. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's proven verifiable scientific fact that 2G, let alone 5G, has adverse human health impact. So here's all this 5G coming, and then we have this 4K video. And don't get me wrong, I think that 4K video surveillance in private hands for private purposes on private property, that where it's not part of a total information awareness public control system, is a good thing. Should people and businesses have the ability to have video surveillance as a deterrence, whether it be for theft, vandalism, or other crime? Yes, they should. But there are really big problems associated with having a massive public project to put cameras everywhere, especially cameras with microphones that are also integrated with wireless, that track the position of your cell phone and track the data that's on your cell phone and your movements throughout the day. All of these things are getting correlated, facial recognition software with artificial intelligence, and all of this ends up getting correlated. And what we see is that this has been used, and it continues to be used, for oppression and tyranny of the citizens of China. Do we think for a second that that is not where this is going here in the United States? I mean, already there is shutting down of free speech simply because people don't like what other people are saying. And that's already happening here in the United States. And part of the concept of free speech in the United States is to be able to speak objectively and persuasively and in a critique fashion. I'm not talking about slander. I'm not talking about defaming people. I'm talking about being able to use anonymity to protect yourself from physical retaliation. I mean, the history of this country goes all the way back to the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist Papers, which were published under pseudonyms for the very purposes that people who disagreed with the statements made by the authors of the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers did not have the ability to find out exactly who these people were so that they could go to their homes with pitchforks and threaten their wives and children. But yet we see this is exactly what's happening here in the United States now. So if you have any doubt, let's just take a look at all of the stuff that's going on in the news right now with regards to names, telephone numbers, home addresses of all kinds of senators and congressmen that are being published, and these things should not be getting published. And then, of course, what happens as a result of that is crazy people show up at these people's homes and try to kill them and threaten them. This even happened with Pai, who was the head of the FCC. I mean, the man couldn't even leave his house. I mean, it's just beyond ridiculous that the head of the FCC is that his family is getting targeted simply because people disagree with the policies of the FCC. That is not constructive civil discourse. That is, it's inappropriate, very, very inappropriate borderline criminal behavior. But this is what happens when you have a panopticon, when there's this total information awareness. Privacy goes away. Anonymity at any level goes away, and apparently even the right to privacy seems to go away. And the impact of that, as we've seen in China, from dozens and dozens of widely published articles in the mainstream media is talking about the social score system in China and how it is being used to deny Chinese citizens from being able to do things like jobs, buy houses, have their children go to private school. They may not be able to buy property. They may not be able to buy a car. They may not be able to get on an airplane or a train. I mean, this is pretty significant totalitarian restriction. Now, couple that with, now Apple has put out what they call the trust score. This is the trust score system by Apple for all iPhone users, and they are claiming that this is to reduce fraud, but really what it comes down to is their trust score is a system where they're literally logging and uploading the entire history of your call and email habits. So they're getting into your email and they're taking a list of all of your call records and uploading that into their artificial intelligence platform and creating a trust score rating on you as an individual, regardless of how many devices you have. This is not a device-specific rating. This is a trust score for users that have an Apple account. So it is aggregating all the data from all of the devices that you have, such as Apple TV, and your iPhone, your iPad, etc., what you buy and phone calls that you make, what are all the emails that you send, and it's creating this to determine a trust score for you. I'm not sure that anybody that uses an iPhone, you know, is really comfortable with that. What are they doing with that data? Why do they have the right to that data? But that's just another extension of how these tech companies are creating these systems, what they call their, you know, their social score, their trust score. It's a way of scoring you as a human being and then putting a rating on you, almost like a credit score. And then that's going to be used to deny things. Now, what I've actually seen, not only firsthand, but I've talked to several other people and I've seen the evidence, so I know that what they're saying is correct. What I've seen firsthand is that Google, over the last, say, 8 months to a year, has changed dramatically their email delivery system. So if they think that you as an individual, again, I'm going to tell you that all of the accounts that you have, they have those all tracked back to you as an individual. Because when you sign up for an account, it all has to go back through this verifiable identification system. They are effectively knowing exactly who you are because they have access, and Microsoft has access, and Yahoo has, there's a whole bunch of these providers that have access to what's called subscriber data. And this is all based upon federal contracts so that they can have total information awareness of knowing who the subscribers are. So if you have to use a non-virtual phone number in order to sign up for a Gmail account, you know, they require you to put your cell phone number in there. That cell phone number is a, it's, you know, goes back to your cell phone account that you have with a carrier that you couldn't have gotten unless you had provided a state-issued ID. A passport's not going to do it. It has to have a state-issued ID. So all of this is tracked back: name, address, date of birth, photograph, driver's license number, all of that. Okay, they have all that information. Then it doesn't matter how many Gmail accounts you have, if those are associated with phone numbers you've ever had or you still have, all of that data is going to be correlated together. And what they're doing with this is looking then at the contents of the emails that you receive and the emails that you send. Yes, Gmail is doing this. And they're saying, okay, well, this person has a political viewpoint that's different than what we in Palo Alto, California happen to like. So we're going to effectively shadow ban them by ensuring that emails that they send to people go into the spam bucket and don't get delivered. And I've seen this. I've had situations where I sent an email to a friend of mine that I went to college with, and it went in their spam bucket. But yet, if I send them an email from my, you know, corporate email address, no problem, it gets delivered. So why is that happening? I'm telling you about some examples of some people that I know firsthand that this has happened to, where these individuals had, a viewpoint that differed from what the Google people in Palo Alto want you to have as a viewpoint. And so they literally could not even email their own Gmail account from their corporate account. There was no rejection message. Just the message would never get delivered. And I've seen this happen as well firsthand. I've had situations where I would email people from my Gmail account and it would never arrive. Or I've had situations where I'd email from my corporate account, which of course they know is associated with me as a person. This is what I'm telling you, is that they're creating these profiles of people as an individual. They are tracking first name, last name. And I wonder to what degree there are false positives where they are correlating that with other people that have your same name. But fundamentally, the world has tectonically shifted. This kind of garbage didn't happen 10 years ago. You know, 10 years ago, the email delivery system was not artificial intelligence-based. It wasn't based upon you as an identity, as an individual. It was based upon what are called the open standards of the internet, such as DKIM and SPF records that are DNS validation, like who is the authorized sender, what mail server is the authorized sender for emails for this domain name. So those are open standards that still exist today, and that should be exclusively what is being used to determine whether or not an email should be delivered. I'm not saying that that's exclusively what it should be getting determined based upon saying, should there be other evaluation criteria for whether or not something is spam? Sure, I could make an argument for that. Should you be doing antivirus scanning? Certainly. Should you be doing anti-malware scanning? Absolutely. But what we're seeing now is emails are just not being delivered at all. They're not going to junk mail, and they're not ending up at the trash. There's no bounce back mechanism. It's just effectively like a shadow banning system. And I've seen too much of this, and I've heard it from too many people that I know exactly what they're talking about, very technically adept people, that this is a pattern. It's not a one-off. It's not just one person's observation. It's not groupthink. It's many people have observed this independently and come basically to the same conclusions. So we're well on our way to this internet trust score, and if you don't log into the internet and then have every search that you ever do tracked and correlated, then you're not even going to get search results. And then take this to that realm of the Dragonfly search engine, which is now live in China, care of the totalitarian factors at Google, where anything that the communist regime does not want the Chinese citizens to be able to see in terms of search results is just outright not displayed. And you can't even use the search engine, and this is the compulsory search engine, but you can't even use it unless you're logged in so they can absolutely track everything that you do. I'm concerned that I think this is coming to the United States because so much of it is here already. We have a whole ton of tech providers that are actively today. Facebook is doing it. You know, they're correlating all of this data about you as a human being with all this, every piece of information they could possibly get about you, including what's in public records.